Do you know the author?
No, I don't, and I don't know the title either. But it's a blue book, and it kind of gives the whole story, you know.
I think we can help you.
Have you a real love of books and learning? When you have these two important qualifications, love for books and love for people, you may well consider the vocation of a librarian.
And welcome to episode 4 of Adventures in Library Instruction. I am Rachel Borchard, and with me are Jason and Anna. Will you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi.
Introduce ourselves, right?
Well, yes, we do. We'll go alphabetically. I'm Jason Puckett. I'm an instruction librarian at Georgia State University in Atlanta, and I blog at jasonpuckett.net. Hi.
Hello, my name is Anna Vanskoik, and I am a part-time reference librarian in a county public library system in central Jersey, and I blog at firstconclusions.com. So glad to be talking with Jason and Rachel again today.
Yay! So it's like a mini reunion.
Yeah, we're a little later in the month than usual because two of us at least just got back from Chicago and are still sort of dazed and confused from that.
Indeed.
How was your conference, Rachel?
Yeah, I want to hear how your conferences were.
I felt like I had less time this time than any other, probably because I am now the senior co-chair of my committee, which means that I actually have to know what I'm doing and attend all of the things I'm supposed to attend. So all day Saturday I was doing stuff and was just, I think I got to go to one program that wasn't STS related.
Which is, tell us what STS is, please.
I'm sorry. It's part of ACRL. STS is the Science and Technology section. I'll actually be mentioning it later on to plug something that one of the other committees is doing, but I'm the co-chair of the assessment committee. So we usually work with the other committees to help them do assessment for whatever they want, but we also work on some other special projects. If you're interested, you know, send me an email and I can tell you all about it.
So you're co-chairing the entire committee, the assessment committee.
Right. Okay. Yeah, there's about 10 of us, I think.
Gotcha.
Right. But I used to be working with a fabulous co-chair who just stepped down, and she was really good at what she did, so I'm trying to live up to her big boots. Anyway, but the best part of the conference for me was my flight was overbooked, so they were asking for volunteers. So I volunteered, and the next flight was only an hour later, and I got a free round-trip ticket. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I found out during ALA, I submitted a proposal with two coworkers for a presentation at the Music Library Association conference, which is in San Diego in March. So I'm thinking I might use my ticket for that.
Oh, Rachel, that's fabulous.
I know.
Congratulations.
So. Awesome. Thanks. Terrific. Well, that sort of fits in with, and I'll talk about ALA a little bit too, but that sort of fits in with what our topic for this month is, which is professional development on little or no budget. So there's a good tip for you. Volunteer for later flights.
Especially if you're going somewhere like Chicago to D.C., there's a lot of flights, so it's really not a hard trip to take.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, if you've got
two major hubs.
If you'd gotten stuck overnight, you probably could have just, you know, gone back to the conference
exactly.
center
and totally
found a friend and, you know, crashed on somebody's hotel floor.
Yeah, but my tip number two would be get a flight that's, like, early afternoon and not the last flight of the day so that it's easier to take a later flight.
Well, I think this is actually going to be my last ALA, not forever, but for a while. I've just finished a term as a co-chair for the really long-named Library Instruction Roundtable Teaching, Learning, and Technology Committee, and I had a terrific committee and a really good term as co-chair. But I think our travel budget's getting cut like everybody else's is, and I've just decided with the limited time and money that I'm going to just, you know, pick and choose a little more discriminatingly what my travel is going to be. So I think this is going to be my last ALA for a while anyway. I'll probably re-up, but I'm actually just going to let my membership lapse for a year or two and see how I feel about it.
Did you, I know that they, just from seeing tweets and blogs, et cetera, that they were saying it was about between 28 and 29,000 participants this year. Do you all know if that's down or up from previous years?
I heard that it was actually up, but I haven't done any research. Yeah, I've heard that, I hope I have this right. I've heard that membership is down, but conference attendance was up, whatever that means.
That's really odd.
Yeah, and it's like people, I guess it means that people can't afford membership for the year. Well, you know what? Actually, I heard one theory, which was that individuals pay for our own memberships, but workplaces pay for the conference. So that may have something to do with it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you from my own, just from my committee point of view, more and more of the people in my committee are saying, I can't go to all these conferences, so I don't know if I can be a part. So we just decided to go virtual for some of our meetings. Yeah.
It seems like ALA and ACR are being more amenable to the virtual committees at this point.
Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it your committee that just came out with guidelines of how to conduct virtual meetings?
It was not actually the LIRT committee that I mentioned, but I am a member of BigWig, and I feel really bad I didn't make it to any BigWig events at this conference. And I, sorry, Jason Griffey, if you're listening. Actually, BigWig, they recruited a task force from BigWig who worked on the electronic conference participation guidelines, and it's like software recommendations and what to do if you have a big group, what to do if you have a single speaker, what to do. So I wrote the podcasting and the slide share sections of that. And this was actually really neat. I was talking, my wife, Anne, went as well. She's an archivist, and she was talking about this came up in one of her committee meetings, I guess. Oh, yeah, they came out with this great electronic participation toolkit, and she was talking to me about it. I said, yeah, that was really awesome. Do you know who worked on it? She goes, you?
Shock, gasp.
So, yeah, that's actually gotten a lot of attention, which I think is really cool, though.
So that document's been finalized, Jason?
As far as I know.
It was sent out on Twitter, I think.
It's on the ALA TechSource blog.
Would you link to it from our podcast, this podcast, in our
absolutely.
Notes, please? Thank you. I love our podcast notes. Please check out our podcast notes. I do.
We're gonna have a lot of them this time.
I know.
But, you know, my committee, my LIRT committee, Teaching Learning Technology, was talking about this. We really did all of our work virtually this over the last year. I mean, we did meet at midwinter, but it was like five people or something, and about five of us met at annual this year. And we were like, you know, we were done in a relatively short time, and we were like, you know, we could have done all this virtually.
Exactly.
So, and we've got a lot of virtual-only members on the committee, too. So.
One of the other committees in SDS meets monthly using ALA Connect, and they have nothing but good things to say about it. And I think they probably get more work done than any other committee, probably because, you know, they have monthly deadlines instead of, you know, twice a year deadlines. So it seems to work really well for them.
Exactly. And I don't know if that's just human nature, but I know that's how I work. I work to the deadline. Like, if I don't have something due until December, I'm not thinking about it right now. You know, but if I have monthly benchmarks, and if they're meeting monthly, I think then if you're working to those smaller increments of deadlines, I could see how they'd be more successful. The continuity is going to be there.
Yep. Yeah, I keep starting, you know, work on things for ALA like maybe a week or two beforehand. I'm like, oh, God, I totally forgot. And everyone else I talk to is like, oh, yeah, I haven't even thought about that yet. So I think we all tend to wait until the last minute.
Yeah.
And as a committee chair, it's because I co-chaired a couple of committees with ACRL's instruction section. And as a committee chair, it's like herding cats because all of a sudden everybody's thinking about it at the last minute and you're like, blah!
Totally, totally. That was our experience too. But, you know, we actually got 100% done on our project. We did a, if I haven't mentioned this before, we did a review of web guide software, libguides, and some of the open source ones, and a couple of other commercial products and so on. And we got it all pulled together. I think there was a lot of stuff we weren't doing till the last minute, but it came out fine. And actually, three of our committee members ended up doing a presentation on it at annual this year, so that was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and Rachel had kind of alluded to this, was when you're active on the committees, you find that you have these required meetings to attend, and you can't go to scheduled programs.
Yeah.
Because, Rachel, you said you were able to make it to only one or two. Jason, were you able to make it to any of them?
I did. I made it to not as much stuff as I wanted to. There was a lot on my schedule that I wanted to do that there's just – I mean, but, you know, that's always the case. But, committee stuff makes it worse. I remember my first ALA when I wasn't on any committees. Actually, it was a few years before I was on a committee. And I would just – you know, I was going to sessions all day, and it seems like, God, where did the time go when I used to be able to do all that? So maybe next time. So,
well, on that note, I think what we're talking about today is going to be how to keep doing professional development, especially in these tough economic times, right?
When there's no money.
Yeah.
So, so Anna, you've got like no professional development budget. Rachel, yours just got cut, right?
It hasn't been cut yet, but... they give extra to new people, so I'm okay for now.
Oh, that's a nice perk.
Yeah, I know, very unexpected, but
well,
very cool.
That's kind of the situation I'm in, too. I mean, ours just got cut. Actually, we just found out, and I don't know how much I should talk about it, but we just found out this week we're going to get like 5% cut off of our budgets just across the board, including travel. So I'll still be able to travel, but you know, for what I expected to, but I'm just going to have to like eat at Subway more often and that sort of thing while I'm traveling. So, which is fine, you know, no problem there.
Hit up all the free dinners you can.
Totally. Totally. Well, the next conference I'm going to is Computers and Libraries, which, you know, I don't think they do like vendor dinners and stuff. I don't know. I haven't been to it yet.
You mean Internet Librarian, then?
I'm sorry, Internet Librarian. Yeah, Computers and Libraries is not until the spring. Yeah, right. Internet Librarian in October, which I'm not speaking at. That's going to be one of the things we're going to talk about is you know, if you're speaking at a conference, a lot of the time they'll waive your registration fee, which for, you know, for Computers and Libraries and Internet Librarian, that's $300-$400.
Right. Jason and I. We actually turned down the proposal that got accepted because they wouldn't pay for us.
They wouldn't pay for
it. It was a lot of money, wasn't it?
They wanted to charge us, and we won't name it, I guess, tacky, but it was, you know, it's going to be $300 to get in, and they wanted us to pay that to come in and talk on a panel. Like, well,
and it was a regional conference, so it wasn't, you know, like an ALA type.
Right, they were flying you across the country.
Right, like we weren't going to go if we weren't speaking.
Right.
Right.
Well, speaking of which, this kind of came across Twitter this week while everyone was at ALA, but they've just announced the call for speakers for Computers and Libraries for 2010, which, Jason, you said is in the springtime. Is that right?
It's in, I don't have the dates for this one, but last year it was the end of March, beginning of April, so I imagine it's around the same time. But I'm definitely going to put some in.
I love their topic. It's information fluency, literacy for life. And so I just think, I mean, I'm sure that there's instruction librarians there already, but to me that just yells. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like instruction librarians, because even though it goes beyond information literacy, you're going to media literacy and digital literacy, et cetera. But it just looks like a very, very interesting conference theme. And those submissions are due, I think it's the 15th of September.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I love about that is that it implies kind of an ongoing relationship with our users to kind of, you know, make – it says literacy for life. It's not the one shot.
Exactly.
You know, it's how these people are growing and continue to interact with information throughout their lives.
Information is a daily part of our lives. It's not – I mean, once you open up that computer and you get all your Yahoo headlines, I mean, it's information. Well, you know, think about it. You go to Yahoo and you see, what did Paris Hilton do today? You know, whatever.
Yeah. You know, I use that sometimes in the beginning of class. For intro science classes, I start asking them, how do you get information? You know, like, who knows what Lindsay Lohan was up to? Like, I always go on to, like, people.com and see what the latest juicy gossip is.
Right.
And ask them about that and say, where'd you get that information? And then, you know, who can tell me something that happened in science recently? Like, you know, Pluto, I guess, is kind of old news now. But then I'd say, where'd you get that information? Well, how do you think scientists get that information? And then kind of go into the whole talk about science. Anyway, sorry.
Right, and information retrieval, how they're accessing their information. That's
right.
A great
and
starting
how do you
point.
Know it's good information?
Exactly. That's a great starting point.
Yeah, it's fun. Because they're always like, what? Lindsay Lohan? But we're in biology class.
You're a librarian.
Yeah.
You know who
you
Lindsay Lohan
see that
is.
Tip.
So I had, you know, I don't do a whole lot of summer classes. It's more just kind of, you know, on request. And I had this professor who I've done a couple of classes for since I got to GSU. And he said, hey, I'm doing a summer class. Will you do it with me? And I decided to try something completely different. And this worked out so well. I hadn't done this before. I started off just talking about different kinds of information sources. And I said, you know, what kinds of information do you use in your papers and where might you get the stuff? And we just like I had them shout out a list and I just wrote it up on the board. And we kind of just went through and talked about each kind of information source. I mean, we talked about books and articles and different kinds of articles, you know, and we got in a little deeper there. And we talked about each one in terms of currency and authority, and I, you know, not necessarily using those words, and tried to stay away from the jargon and everything. But I did this like right out of the gate at the beginning of class, and I think they weren't quite, you know, they were a little shocked and weren't quite sure what was going on at first. But we got into a really good discussion, and it really got them talking, and it really got them, and we tried to use sort of, you know, current topics like you were talking about, and they had a terrific assignment. It was all kind of pop culture stuff, and they had a long list of stuff that they could use. And we started talking about, you know, this specifically with their assignments and just how would you use books, how would you use, and we talked about Michael Jackson, you know, if you're using books in a paper about Michael Jackson, is it going to be current, you know, what about, you know, newspapers and stuff like that. And it went really well. So not a great story, but I had a really good class and I just wanted to talk about it. So
I like that because one thing I've been talking about with some people is the idea that your students aren't blank slates when they come into class, that we tend to think like they know nothing about, you know, about information and how to gather it, and we're just going to fill their heads. But they often come in with these assumptions, and sometimes they're wrong assumptions. So, like, the first thing you have to do is kind of correct those, and if you don't know that they're there, they're hard to correct. So that sounds like a really good chance to kind of, you know, get a feeling for where are they in regards to how they do research and what kind of sources they use and how they think about those sources. So you can really kind of get at the meat of where it is that you need to focus your instruction.
Right, and some stuff they were right on top of and some stuff they just had no clue about. You know, I made them guess what a peer-reviewed journal was, and they sort of got all around it, you know, right in the right area and everything. And but I was really pleased because, you know, usually for me summer is, of course this is a new job for me, but a lot of times summer is kind of a drought period for teaching, and so I get sort of stage fright when I have to go back up and do it again after, you know, a few weeks or a couple months off or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this went really well. Anna, you're doing some new teaching stuff, right?
I am. I am going to be back in the classroom after 2 years. Talk about a drought.
Whoa.
Yeah, talk about stage fright coming back, right?
Yeah, I'm already losing sleep.
Oh.
But I'm very, very excited. Even, just to get a little personal here, even my husband has noticed that I am happier because I'm with my work, because I'm excited to be back teaching. And it's just, for me, it's been kind of reevaluating what to teach, because this really isn't going to be database 101 or anything like that. I'm kind of taking the tools that either the library offers, such as we have this one thing called ListenNJ, which is provided for New Jersey through, there's a Central Jersey Regional Library Cooperative, and so they help fund this. And you can basically download audiobooks to your computer and transfer it to your MP3 player, mm-hmm. or burn them to a disc or whatever. So I'm taking that idea and we're doing a workshop, which is, I think everyone's been like, a workshop? You're actually going to do a workshop? Because what's interesting is the branch that, where I am, we have no computer lab. There's no computer. I mean, there's a computer, there, people can access the internet there, but there's not like a set classroom where I can do this. So what I'm basically doing is bringing in any kind of laptop that I can, and people are going to bring their own laptops if they have them, and we're just going to kind of go grassroots when we
That's
do
great,
it.
Though.
That's awesome.
So some other classes I have lined up, and this kind of goes with the whole thing that we were talking about initially, just how information really is part of our daily lives, whether we're creating that information, whether we're accessing information, whether we're researching, etc. So I'm doing like blogs and RSS feeds and just kind of go through and how to manage your blogs, I guess. I want to do one on Twitter. I'm kind of looking at it in that scope, more of the everyday life information that we have at our fingertips. So those are the topics I've come up with so far. I've just been trying to figure out what other people are doing. It's interesting because a lot of the classes that I see at public libraries are kind of your Word, Excel, you know, kind of your Microsoft software programs. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to go beyond that into what people are using as communication tools, I guess.
But I've seen some public libraries online that do just some amazingly cool technology-related workshops and information-related workshops on stuff that I never would have thought of doing, you know, like on free software, open source software, and, you know, stuff. Some of the stuff you're talking about, you know, there's stuff you could adapt from, like, the 23 Things program about social software. I mean, there's so much that you could adapt. I really hope that takes off because it sounds really cool. I hope you'll blog about it.
And it's just, it's very different than what as an instructor, how I was trained on, I mean, everything always did with research, basically. It really did. I mean,
right.
I don't know if you two agree with that, but even immersion, it was always research literacy, information literacy. And this is information literacy. I just think it's kind of going the broader social, cultural environment.
Now, are you going to do that between now and next time we podcast?
Oh, yes. I'm probably going to be doing – I have three set up right now, three classes.
Workshops.
So we got to talk about that on the next episode,
okay,
though.
Okay,
yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't
bomb. Are you going to touch on things like Facebook, MySpace? Like,
you know what,
Twitter?
Rachel? I do. I want to do one on Facebook. MySpace, my thing with, and I could do MySpace, but I'm not as familiar with MySpace as I am with Facebook. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of my comfort realm also. I mean, what do I know? What do I experiment with on my own?
Well, Facebook's the big one now anyway. I mean, MySpace is kind of,
Facebook, I just think everything with the privacy settings and,
yes,
and people, it's just like, it's always changing. So it really is one of those things I would love to bring people in, because I know looking at Facebook and seeing my newly acquired friends I've made, because I have my 20th high school reunion coming up. And so all these people that I went to high school with. Hey, BHS, Bloomington High School. Go 89. What am I saying? I can watch them using it, and I can see who's posting to whose wall. I can see who's commenting on what post, and it's just like, I don't know if they really want me to see all of that.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't think all the librarians who I'm on Facebook with really want to see all the pictures of my child. I really don't. You know, I mean, it's like you can lock those down. So anyway, I think Facebook would be a good one, just to be a savvy user with Facebook and to realize when you're going online like that, what you're disclosing.
You know what you should do is if there's someone in there who's like a parent, you should ask for their child's name and then try and dig up all the information on their child. As, like, the example of, like, this is what happens when you don't set privacy settings.
That's,
you know?
But, you know, Rachel, that's funny, because I've had these friends who are parents now, and they say, this is why I joined Facebook, because my teenager is on it. What can you tell me about it? And it's just like, oh, my gosh. And so now they're on it. And that's what I tell them, like, go on it yourself, because that's what's going to give you the best review for what they can really see and what's going on and who they're interacting with.
Yep. My mom just joined Facebook.
No boy.
And I know. It was like maybe 2 weeks ago. And she wrote on my wall that just said, it looks like you're having fun. Love, Mom. And I was like, oh, God. There's pictures of me drinking and, you know, dancing and making stupid faces. And it's like, oh, I don't know what she's thinking. A little close to home.
Oh, shoot. So I'll let you guys know how it goes and other classes that that kind of pop up. Things, a lot of things are still kind of rolling around in my head, things to do.
awesome. Well, I want to do some new technology workshops here, so I'm going to kind of steal ideas from you as you come up with good ones, too. I can't wait to hear about it.
Well, shall we move on to our professional development on little or no budget?
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, we've...
I'm excited about this topic because I haven't been, ever since I've started this new position, ever since I left my job at Emory University, I guess, I have not been on ALA. I basically let my membership just last. I didn't renew it. And so my biggest fear was I'm going to be so out of touch with what's going on. And I found I've just the venues I've taken online and local groups, I actually feel like I'm okay. I mean, I don't want to dissuade anybody from doing an LA, but there's things out there. And I guess for those people who are on no budget or little budget, there really are these opportunities out there to help you stay in the know with our field. Because as we all know, our field is changing constantly. So I just wanted to give that little plug. I'm very excited to talk about this.
Well, I was gonna ask about local organizations, actually, because I know you don't have any kind of a travel budget or anything. But I mentioned to a friend of mine that we were going to be talking about this today, and she goes, "You're going to plug local organizations, right?" Because she's very active in Georgia Library Association. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, we're definitely going to talk about that. I just sort of, when I started, you know, getting involved in, you know, professional activities and stuff. I mean, I was still, I did not yet have my MLIS and wasn't yet a librarian, but I just sort of, so I didn't really know as much about the local organizations. I had heard of ALA, and so I figured, well, that's how you get started, you join ALA. So I haven't been very active in local organizations, but I mean, the cost of involvement in GLA as opposed to ALA is just, I mean, it's fractional. You know, you can drive to any of the events, and probably more so in New Jersey, I would guess. Mm-hmm. You know, you can drive to any of the events, and there's, I mean, just membership cost is so much lower.
No, I agree with what you're saying, Jason. In D.C., they have a D.C. library organization, and then our consortium is actually pretty active. We are the I can't remember what it stands for, but WRLC, and it's maybe about 10 libraries in the D.C. area. And we have about once a semester or so, they'll pick a topic and have an all-day conference. So next week actually is one on instruction, and I think it's the future of instruction. So I'm giving a talk about podcasting and instruction, but people are doing all sorts of topics. So yeah, it's, you know, one, a good way to add to the resume, but two, a good way to kind of learn what other libraries are up to, you know, because we're all struggling with the same things. So
that, and just the networking aspect, just kind of meeting people that you could do future presentations, partnerships with. I mean, that's the local. I'm trying to think. I was a part of the Georgia Library Association when I was at the University of Georgia. But the organization I felt I got the most from was, I mean, just super grassroots, just there were no bylaws at the time. There are now. But it was the Atlanta Area Bibliographic Instruction Group.
Right. Yeah.
And I know that that term is passe, bibliographic instruction, but it makes a nice acronym, the BIG. So that's why it's still that way, so people know. But that one, I remember I met just these people who were, and that was the specific focus, and that's what I liked about it, is that it focused on instructional techniques, and the focus sometimes is what I need. I don't, because I get overwhelmed at ALA. I get overwhelmed at the big conferences when there's so much going on.
Right.
But that one, I mean, and you can look and see if there is something like that in your area, just that kind of specific group that's getting together. And they only got together annually, but still, it was a nice little thing to go to and meet other teaching librarians and see what they were doing.
I went to it last year. I didn't go this year, but I went to it last year, and it was really good. As I recall, it didn't even cost anything to attend. Is that right, Anna, you were involved?
It's free, yeah. It's always a free conference, and it just changes every year. Sometimes they do breakout sessions. Sometimes they bring in a major speaker, because there are some funds there, but it's a nonprofit organization, basically. So they do try to bring speakers in every once in a while. But usually it's just people from local who are coming in to present things that they're doing.
Right.
You know, one thing I love about those local conferences is that it's so much easier to kind of go up to someone afterwards, you know, and say, hey, that was really cool. Do you mind if I get in touch with you? Or, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. Whereas in ALA, I'll hear great presentations, but it's like, you know, there's like 200 people in attendance. There isn't really that chance for one-on-one interaction
right.
to talk to them.
I've met a lot of people that way that have become, you know, friends and colleagues later. Yeah.
Well, Jason, when you were, I remember you talking about a group. When you were, this is while you were in library school.
Uh-huh.
And there was a group of you that would get together, and I think all of you were library students at the time.
Yes, I know
and
what you're talking
about.
I
always thought that was the neatest thing that you all did that.
Well, it's actually, now I'm trying to remember the name. Oh, well, the Atlanta Emerging Librarians Group, that's it. There are a couple of them, actually, that I'm thinking of. It was, is still active for library school students and new grads and new librarians. Atlanta Emerging Librarians, and I'll find a link. I'm making a note to put that in the show notes here. But yeah, they get together, I think it's 4 times a year. I've not gone recently just because of the timing has been opposite when I've had things going on. But it's a great way to get presentation experience and to meet people. And they've had some local library administrators come, and you know, not quite like a job fair, but like a networking thing. And it's just terrific because you know, in Atlanta, there's not a library school anymore; has not been for several years. Mm-hmm. And so, everybody who goes to library school in Atlanta is going either by distance education or some other kind of long distance deal. You know, traveling back and forth for classes or whatever. So, you know, it's not really like you meet your classmates if you're in library school in Atlanta, or at least that was my experience. There was also a listserv, still is, again, for Florida State students in the Atlanta area, which was where I got my degree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, same situation since there's not a, you know, a local campus, that was the only way we got to meet each other.
Right.
So. Yeah, that was terrific, and you know, no money involved or anything
right.
like that. And I got to present a couple of times, you know, and when I was really focusing on building my resume and stuff like that, I was like, I really need a little presentation experience. And I just said, hey, can I present? You know, here's a couple of things I could present on. They said, yeah, great, sure. So,
I will say that listservs are another good way to stay on top of things. It seems like ILI is one that I follow that always has good information. I follow STS, which is great, especially for the sciences I don't know much about. I used to follow, there was a health sciences one that I used to be a part of. But they always, you know, I always am struck by how often the questions that people are asking are questions that have come up in my own library. And, you know, you'll always get other people responding, say, oh, yeah, I had that same problem. So it can be a really great way to stay on top of stuff. Without ever leaving your office.
I gotta say, though, I have just almost completely stopped following listservs. I'm still on some, you know, I'm on ILI, but I never remember to go and read it because I put it into a folder because there's so much traffic. All of my contact now, you know, with online stuff is through blogs, it's through RSS Reader, it's through Friend Feed in particular. And I'm just not reading listservs anymore, and I know there's good conversations going on, but it's just like, you know, I can't handle the email overload anymore. I've got to be able to go to it. For my comfort level, I've got to be able to go to it and read it when I want to, and then, you know, leave it again and not have it coming into me. It feels more intrusive coming into my inbox all the time. But
I'm the kind of person who, if I have to go there, I never will. So it has to come to me.
Jason, it's kind of refreshing to hear you say that in a way, because I'm the same way. I'm still on, even though I'm not on ALA, I still am on, like, the ILI listserv,
uh-huh.
InfoLit, I'm trying to think of what else, but I don't go and check them anymore, and that's the thing is I know I'm missing things. I know I'm missing good information,
right.
Great anecdotes, et cetera, you know, things that people are doing. But I go in, and I'm also in PubLib, and I went into it the other day, and there was like 1,000 messages in there, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's like trying to sip from a fire hydrant. It's just, you know, there's too much. And I think you just got to find your own channel that you can that you can appreciate.
The one that speaks to you.
Yeah. Now, talking of which, though, there's one group that I really wanted to plug while we're talking about this, and that is Library Society of the World. And I know, Rachel, do you call yourself an LSW member?
I am not an LSW member. I do have the ribbon from ALA.
Okay, you got a ribbon. I know I gave you a ribbon.
To you, yeah.
Right. But Anna, you're an LSW, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And the way you become a member is you declare yourself a member, and it's a completely non-hierarchical organization. You can give yourself your own title. And I forget what my title is. I think it might have been Last Son of Krypton at some point was my official LSW title.
I thought you were a fancy like man of...
Yeah, that's a Futurama joke, Fancy Man of Cornwood.
Aww,
that's my
man.
No, that's just my Twitter. That's my Twitter description. But and this sounds very silly the way I'm describing it, and I should say that... it's completely non-hierarchical, and there's a lot of humor and a lot of good, you know, sort of high spirits that go on in the discussions. But there is a really a terrific bunch of very, very smart people who are just very excited about doing good work in libraries that are involved in the LSW. And most of the discussion, at least that I participate in, takes place on FriendFeed, and we'll include an LSW link on FriendFeed. There is a blog at thelsw.org, and that's thelsw.org. FriendFeed gets a lot more traffic than the blog does. But basically, you can join by declaring yourself a member, and I use it all the time for brainstorming, and I see a lot of people use it this way. Hey, I've got a class on X topic, and I usually do it this way, but that's boring. Can you give me some ideas? Or I'm working on an article on this. What would you like to see covered? Or I regularly post before we do the podcast. I say, hey, we're going to be talking about this on the podcast. What do you want to hear about? So, you know, it's a great way to get ideas, and I've connected with people that way that I, you know, have put in conference proposals with and all kinds of stuff. So it's a fantastic way to meet, you know, really smart, really enthusiastic librarians, a lot of very tech-savvy people, but just, you know, a lot of really bright, really engaged librarians.
When I think of all my experiences, when I've posted some type of, I'm sure they're probably looking at my questions like, oh my gosh, who is this idiot? But the feedback I get from people has always been so amazingly helpful. And that's just it, is that people are so willing in that group to give you their 2 cents and give you their opinions and give you really concrete steps that you can take in whatever endeavor it is that you had a question about.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it really, as you said, very knowledgeable. They're just so willing to help you. I mean, it's just been a very nice experience, and I'm just very grateful that they're there.
It kind of makes me wonder what professional organization involvement must have been like, you know, 15 years ago or a generation ago before we had the internet. And I just can't fathom how it could have worked. I mean, it can't have been anything like the way we do stuff now. I mean, you know, pre-email, pre-blogs, pre all of this stuff that we just take for granted and use on a daily basis. You know, it's just like I said, our ALA committee kind of discovered, well, you know, we do just fine without the in-person meetings most of the time. Mm-hmm. The in-person meetings are great, and you can maybe sort of in a more concentrated fashion get stuff done because everybody's there at the same time on the same task. But, you know,
I think in some ways it's interesting to see how the old world and new world are kind of, you know, adjusting to each mm-hmm. other. But I mean, think about our podcast. I tend to think of it as like a new way to kind of almost publish, not informal research, but, you know, just discussion points about instruction. Whereas before we had like library journals, and we still have them, but it's just, this is kind of the new way of doing it, you know, and it's not one replaces the other, but you kind of figure out what the use of each thing is, and they all just kind of grow and help you be a better librarian.
It gives us a whole new channel for discussion that I think, you know, couldn't have existed 15 years ago.
Right.
Really, I mean, this kind of informal stuff that we do, and it's, you know, and it's fun and it's easy to do, but we get really good ideas and we end up talking to people, you know, like Dana last time, that, you know, we just probably never would have met otherwise.
Right, that's true.
And it doesn't take years. That's the best part. You don't have to, like, meet her at a conference and then say, hey, we should, you know, do some group proposal on X issue and then hope it gets accepted, and, you know, it's quick and it's easy and it's out there.
Right, and that stuff still goes on. It's just, you know, we can do all this other stuff too.
Right.
I know I certainly consider this podcast as being part of my professional involvement, even though there's, you know, no sanction by my employer, and they don't, I'm not sure they even know or care. I know my boss listens. Hi, Leslie. You know, I'm not sure they know or have any awareness outside of a couple of people that I do this. But, you know, it's certainly something that when I go up for promotion and I want to demonstrate, you know, my engagement with the profession, I'm going to talk about this podcast. I'm going to talk about, you know, the blog stuff that I do and, you know, things like that. Not that I blog much these days, but, you know, all of the informal stuff that I do, I certainly consider it a very important part of my professional growth, and all the people, mostly the people that I've met that way.
I guess on the flip side of that is every time we, even when we have these chats like this, I learn something new. I learn something new I want to try. I learn something new about some resource that's out there. You know, things that I didn't know about. I mean, just in these monthly talks that we do, the three of us. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel like I'm always coming out of it with new ideas.
A three-person conference. You can eavesdrop
that everyone else
on.
Listens in on. Yeah. So if anyone wants to be a part of our three-person conference, we're always looking for more people.
There's always room for one more. All you need
Indeed.
Is Skype and a microphone.
Yeah.
You know, we're not picky.
I know.
One other thing I was thinking about, and I have not done this myself, so I cannot talk about my experience using it, but is to create your own webinar. I know that there are free webinars out there. Whether there's a directory of free library webinars somewhere, I'm not sure. I'd have to look and see. But even if you wanted to create your own webinar, there's like all this free software out there that you can use where you can share your desktop with somebody and do an online presentation, kind of similar to the online instruction software that's available. But this is all free. There's DimDim and VRoom, and I think it's Yugma. I don't even know how to say it. I haven't even used it. But I'm so intrigued by that, because if you think about the connections that we're making with people, I mean, we're doing right now, it's starting out as, okay, we're doing a presentation together. Here's a person I've met through my blog or through FunFeed. But I kind of think that natural step, and even this happened with LSW. This was two gentlemen, you know, Joshua Neff and
Steve Lawson.
Steve Lawson came up with, let's do, you know, a library. A library organization, an association. So the next step could kind of be people doing their own webinars, putting together their own informal webinars.
I would love to see an LSW online unconference, because I've been hearing about unconferences for a while and I've never been to one, and they sound so great. You know, everybody just sort of comes in talking about prepared to talk about what they want to talk about, and the group just kind of says, okay, yeah, let's have a session on this and a session on that, and it's, you know, it's a conversation rather than one person in front of the room. But that, it seems to me, that would work so well online if you could get everybody into, you know, whatever platform you're using.
So is that the term that you use, unconference? Is that what I just described, what it would be on a, if you used like a free webinar software?
Well, unconference, I'm sorry, go ahead, Rachel.
Sorry. I was just thinking, I mean, if you're going to host a webinar, you probably already have a topic in mind. So you would say, you know, like, I'm going to talk about library help. Anyone who wants to come, you know, come join me at this time, this place. Where in unconferences, like, we're going to host people, and then we're going to decide what the topics are.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to be whatever you all want it to be. And whoever feels comfortable teaching that is going to teach it. And whoever wants to learn about it, go learn about it. So I think that's probably the big difference. But there isn't any reason that you couldn't have it using webinar software.
Right,
theoretically.
Right,
or maybe
right.
Like you get together the day before and decide the topics, and then those presenters set up webinars.
Gotcha.
Something like that.
Yeah, but I'd love to see more sort of, you know, informal online conferences go on like that. You know, there's one that we were going to talk about. The handheld, this is not informal, this is an actual mm-hmm. organized conference. The handheld librarian conference, what is that called? Somebody help me out.
Handheld librarian.
Yeah, and that's like next week, so by the mm-hmm. time this podcast goes out, it'll be like coming right up. This is something I was going to ask to maybe register for anyway, but my workplace went ahead and got like a group rate for it. But they're doing the whole conference online. They've got, you know, it's not an unconference. They have scheduled speakers and scheduled sessions and everything. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, how much cheaper is that for an organization? I mean, you can get like a group rate and then have all of your employees come to it and do right. whatever sessions they want. And there was a local one of those recently as well in Georgia. There was I ended up not going to it, but it was like for all the University System of Georgia schools, and it was like an online conference. Have you done any of those, Anna, in particular, since I know you don't get to travel a whole lot?
Nope.
Have you done an online conference? Okay.
Nope. I'm a virgin.
Well, I've been to some. I haven't done like a whole online conferencing, but I've done webinars, and I've given one.
That's
and
right.
I've gone to, which I'm giving again in October. I'll put in a plug for it. You'll be hearing more about it
awesome.
Like on the September episode. Yes, I was very pleased. ACRL asked me to come back and do it again. But I've been to or participated in several online at this point, and some of them have been terrific, and some of them have been just complete snooze fests. And mm-hmm. I was going to say I won't name names, but I can't name names because the ones that were really dull, I don't even remember. So it seems to be really kind of a hit or miss thing.
This is the unconference that you've done.
No, this is I'm talking about like webinars.
Webinars. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah,
I don't think any of us have done on conferences. Have you, Jason?
I haven't, no. I would love to. If there was one in driving distance, I would totally go to one. Although, you know, I've heard the question, how do you get your workplace to give you release time, even if the thing is free? How do you get your workplace to let you go to this thing? And right. I probably could, you know, if I asked for it. But I can imagine that there are a lot of places that would say, unconference, what is this thing you want to go to? And, you know, you just want the day off.
It's almost like we need to name it like Uber Awesome Technology Conference of Secret Importance or something.
Maybe
like
that's
just it. And then we'll all just know it's unconferences.
Although the word unconference is gaining more currency, so I imagine that
yes.
a lot of administrators sort of know what it is now.
Oh, I don't know. I think our administrators still think that we check out books all day, so I don't expect them to know anything like that, but that's just us.
Well, while we still have time, I want to talk about something that we did at work recently that went over really well, I think, as an experiment. We did an instruction, we call it the instruction forum, and it was kind of an in-house mini-conference in a way.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Now that we have a department, there's actually three whole people in my department now that I'm here. It started, and we're about to acquire a fourth, so that was cool. But we started having regular meetings and talking about, you know, ideas for what we can do. And we started talking about, you know, getting some more discussion going on at work around the topic of instruction. We talked about brown bag meetings and things like that. And somehow we came up with this idea, what if we had like a little half-day forum where it was all, you know, coworkers, basically, but it was open to anybody in the library. And we said, you know, if you want to come and present on an instruction-related topic, or just come and listen and learn. And a few people, we sort of specifically said, hey, I know you're doing this really cool thing. Would you be willing to present on it for, you know, 20, 25 minutes, something like that? These were not long presentations. And we had, I think we had about, God, was it 5, 6 people? We had a few people present, and it was like a 3-hour event, and people could come and go for the sessions that they wanted to come to. And we had all across the board, all different instruction-related topics. Somebody did using current news events in instruction classes. We had somebody talk about design, graphic design for libguides. I talked about podcasting. somebody talked about using Jing to make screencasts. And we had somebody talk about like a current awareness workshop that they did for the biology faculty. So it's just all across the board. We had about, I want to say 20 people showed up, and which was terrific for an experiment, mm-hmm. you know, and we did a survey afterward to assess it and ask people, you know, how often would you want to do this, once a year, twice a year? And everybody said, the vast majority of people said, do it twice a year. We had, you know, it cost us next to nothing. We brought, you know, some cheapy snacks and things like that. So it didn't really cost us anything to put on. And it was great. And I learned so much new stuff and, you know, kind of got to hear some colleagues' ideas that I don't work with on a day-to-day basis very much. And it was just, you know, we really considered it a rousing success. So we're going to do it again either at the end of this year or either right before winter break or maybe the beginning of January when everybody comes back. We're going to try and do it like twice a year.
So Jason, did it run the spectrum of people who were presenting? I mean, I guess who came and who was presenting? Was it people who were reference librarians? Was it subject librarians?
Mostly. Yeah, okay. Yeah, mostly reference librarians and liaisons, although we had people from CertCom. We had people who were staff members who were in library school came. So we got a better mix than I thought. Mostly the people who came were the people who actually do instruction. You know, the three of us who are in the instruction department, me and my boss, and we have an awesome support staff member who was one of the presenters. We had one of the Learning Commons librarians who's basically our reference and instruction department that does outreach to undergrads. And we had a lot of the subject librarians come. They do a lot of the instruction stuff. So we had a really good mix, though. I was really pleased.
We used to do that at one of the places I worked in. I always loved the mix that we would get because we would get archivists in, as well as people who kind of had that dual role as a cataloger and a reference librarian or whatever, and just to kind of get these different perspectives from people. My favorite really was when the archivists would come, just because it's such a world I don't know, and just to hear them talk about the teaching techniques that they would use. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's something that I want to do next time. In fact, we talked about this, is making sure that our special collections and archives folks get, you know, make sure that they know that they're welcome and try and get them to participate some, because I know they do teaching that we know nothing about.
And, you know, the best one of those that I remember going to was when someone from the theology library came to Emory and talked about how he used their primary source materials.
Right, like exactly.
What was it? It was wooden carvings and stuff like
woodcut.
That.
Yeah,
to bring up all of these interesting issues that dealt with libraries, but in this really fascinating kind of story setting.
I would love to see that. I've seen archivists who do teaching, and, you know, like when I bring a class up to special collections or something like that, and they're always around, you know, like narrative stuff, because they've got these cool artifacts and they know what the students get engaged with, and they've always got such great kind of narrative stuff to go along with the teaching. So maybe we need to do an Adventures in Library Instruction online unconference at some point. What do you guys think?
That sounds awesome.
I think
I
we should totally do that. We could do it all over Skype. Can you do slides on Skype?
I don't know.
I don't know if you can.
We may have to find some different software then, but
yeah, I'm sure we can find something that'll work for us.
That'd be great, though. We should think about doing that.
Yeah, it'd be really fun.
Of course, I say this just as the school year is getting ready to gear up.
Right.
Maybe next summer, or maybe later in the year or something.
Yeah.
I would love to do that. I would totally be on board for that.
All right. We'll do it sometime in the future.
Cool. Well, we're kind of coming up on an hour here.
Yeah.
Have we covered like all the ideas that we were brainstorming that we want to talk about?
Shoot. I had one other thing, is that I this is the only one that I know of, but I know that there's many others like it. But for STS, there's the instruction Information Literacy section has put together this great wiki, and it's just a warehouse of information literacy in the sciences, and it's anything you could think of. So it's like rubrics for grading people's, you know, bibliographies, or ideas for teaching specific concepts. It's the standards for information literacy in the sciences. It's how to assess it's everything. And it's a fabulous resource, and I encourage you all to find information literacy sites like that, because I think it takes a lot of the guesswork out of how to do instruction.
There's a few of those out there, aren't there? I'm kind of blanking on some of the topics, on some of the names of them right now.
Yeah, my favorite is the LibSuccess Wiki.
LibSuccess,
They've got some terrific stuff. There used to be a library instruction wiki out there, but I think the last time I looked for it, I think that it was no longer there. But LibSuccess.org, I think, has some really good instruction-related stuff on it. Well, before we run out of time, I want to mention something that I forgot to mention last time. You guys know that I'm a big Zotero geek, the bibliographic software Zotero, and I actually started up and meant to talk about it on the last podcast. I started up a Zotero group with a new version of Zotero. You can have groups where you can share bibliographic references and citation info, and I'll put a link on the show notes to this, but it's zotero.org/groups/adventures_in_library_instruction. I'll put a link that'll be easier to find than that. But it's open access. Anybody can join. And I just thought I'd start this up as an experiment and see who, if we use it and if people want to use it as a way to share cool references, things like that.
Another professional development tool.
Another tool, and in fact, today I thought, well, why hasn't somebody started a Library Society of the World group? So I started that too. So. I told you I'm a big Zotero geek. I would do anything in Zotero if I could. So.
I just wanted to throw this out to anyone who's listening out there, is that if there's things that we didn't really cover on things that you know about kind of how to do inexpensive or free professional development opportunities, we would love to hear them. I especially would love to know them, but I know everyone would, especially in these times that we want to know what are people doing to kind of keep up with the profession.
Mm-hmm. Comment on the blog, and if we get enough ideas, maybe we'll do a follow-up to this. Okay, thank you guys very much for the time. I've had a blast, as always.
Yes, thank you.
It's been good.
Thank you for listening.
Adventures in Library Instruction is produced by Rachel Borcher, Jason Puckett, and Anna Van Skoik. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. To subscribe, go to our website at adlibinstruction.blogspot.com. Leave comments and suggestions on the blog or email us at adlibinstruction@gmail.com. Our opening theme song is Dropping Out of School by Brad Sucks, and our closing theme is Higher Education by the Napoleon Bonapartes. Both are available at magnatune.com.
Contact the library schools and the American Library Association. They are able to give you valuable advice.